Hey everyone, J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. The podcast you're about to hear was recorded with myself and Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Journal Sentinel, a few days ago. So some of the details have changed as it relates to the labor negotiations, or lack of negotiations, between the Players Association and the owners of Major League Baseball. Pretty much everything we talked about, it still applies. We were keeping it pretty open-ended. But over the weekend, the players basically said they were done negotiating. The owners have consistently try to get the players to take something less than prorated salaries for the remainder of the season with stadiums being emptied. They're arguing that they're going to lose too much money to pay a full prorate, prorata, I guess that would be. And the players finally said, you know what, we've had enough. Just tell us when to start the season, whether it be 50 games or fewer, which is a possibility here. And we really want an answer by Monday. So as you're listening to this, we're probably going to get some news pretty closely, if not already, from Commissioner Rob Manfred setting the start date of the 2020 season. It's looking like it's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 some games, maybe 60 if we keep our fingers crossed, but the owners were unwilling to move off the idea, or rather accept the idea, that the players wanted nothing less than prorated salaries, and the players did not budge off that demand, and so here we are. So basically they've now accused each other of bad faith negotiating. It's a big mess. The players and the owners are completely at odds. Very bad omen for what's to come, certainly for this season, also for the labor negotiations ahead after the 2021 season. It is not ideal right now. There will be some serious fence mending required if we're going to get if we're going to avoid another work stoppage here in a couple years. Obviously, at the moment, most people are just concerned about this season. So just wanted to provide that update, that context, and let you know that what we talked about happened a couple days ago before this latest sort of, before the Cold War really got chilly between the two sides. So give a listen. We also, of course, talk about Brewers first round draft choice, Garrett Mitchell, as well as a new book Tom's got coming out on the history of the Milwaukee Brewers, turning 50, looking back at the 50 seasons of the franchise. Here we go. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Joining you once again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line is Milwaukee Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Tom Hodricourt. We're here to talk about a book that Tom has released to the world, Turning 50, the Brewers Celebrate a Half Century in Milwaukee, a look back at the 50 years of Milwaukee Brewers baseball. Of course, the Brewers were going to celebrate their 50th anniversary during the 2020 season. Celebrations on hold, with the season being on hold, and of course, we'll talk about that a little bit as well. Tom, it's been a few weeks. How are things going?
Good. I mean, you know, I'd like to have a 2020 baseball schedule in front of me, but we don't yet, and time is a wasting. You know, I thought Rob Manfred, Commissioner Rob Manfred, made the most astute comment anybody's made when they were talking to him before the draft Wednesday night, when he said, every day that passes is another game we can't play. And that's because they are not willing, ownership's not willing to add at the back end. You know, they're nervous about that. They're nervous about the second wave of coronavirus and it's just getting too cold too in some places. So every day, if you assume that they are not going to add games, regular season games, after September, every day we don't have agreement is one less game on the schedule. And it's pretty obvious now it's going to be less than a half a season, less than 81 games.
Yeah, we'll talk about the draft that you mentioned, the Brewers selecting Garrett Mitchell with their first-round pick. We'll discuss that a little bit. And like I said, I do want to talk about this book that looks back at Brewers history. But going a little bit back to the stalemate that the players' union and the baseball owners seem to be in right now, I don't know where the cutoff is for me in my head, but the back and forth, the idea that Rob Manfred might set a 50-game season or even slightly less than a 50-game season, it just feels like not enough baseball. And 80 games is not much more than that. That's just one additional month of baseball. I don't know why 80 games for me feels better, you know, feels like something that I could live with, whereas 50 games feels like a cheapened, almost non-event of a season. I don't know where you fall on that, if any number really if there is a number that really matters, or if it's just the concept of being closer to a full half a season when you're in the 80 game range versus, you know, something much more, much smaller than that. I mean, if we have a 50-game season, which is kind of looking like where we're headed, is that going to feel just like a total waste of time, or are people just going to be so relieved to see baseball back that any amount of baseball games will do?
Well, I don't think it'll be a total waste of time, because I think most people feel any baseball is better than no baseball. But I do think it will not be satisfying. You know, it's like ordering that meal that you were waiting for so long, and then you come, and it was okay. But, you know, you're probably not going to go back and eat there again. it's just, you know, it's not going to be very savory. And the shorter distance between the amount of games in a quote-unquote regular season and the amount of games of a postseason makes it a little bogus. You know, it's you're going to almost have as long as a postseason as you do as a regular season. In other words, you're becoming the NBA.
You're absolutely right. And at this rate, the NBA might be back in their postseason before we see baseball again. But Rob Manfred did say at the draft there is a 100% chance. I mean, 100% baseball will be back. Although, like I said, it looks like we're headed toward this situation where the owners will live up to their agreement to give full prorated play, but as a compensation for that, reduce the season down to, you know, to a 50 or maybe even less 50-game season. From the outsider's perspective, I haven't been in, you know, sort of like following every maneuver that the two sides have made, but it sure seems like the owners are the ones that are kind of being cast in the negative light here, that they're the ones with the, you know, they're the billionaires in the billionaires versus millionaires competition, and they're the ones who are just refusing to take a loss. On the other hand, it looks like the players simply won't budge off of this, the idea that they're going to get full prorated pay, because that was their understanding in the beginning. They feel that the agreement in March was they will get prorated pay, and they just feel like, in my mind, it just seems like they were told that, and they're not moving off of that because that's what the owner said in the first place.
Right.
Is that what you see, or do you see that as just that's a fundamental thing that the players simply can't do without?
Right. I mean, that's the gist of the dispute, and it all goes back to, incredibly, the two sides can't agree on what they agreed on. You know,
right.
I mean, how did that happen? You know, The players say, we agreed on full prorated pay for however many games we're going to play. And the owner said, if you read the wording closely and read between the lines, we have leeway to discuss finances further if there are no fans in the stands. So they just don't agree that that's what was agreed on. You know, players say, we've already settled money. Owner said, we thought we had the ability to talk about it some more. It's pretty daggone evident that players are not coming off full prorated pay. They have every counter proposal they make always has full prorated play. And that's why it looks like we're headed towards a mandated by the commissioner short season of 50 games or so, because the owner's viewpoint is, okay, if you're going to insist on prorated play and not come off of that, then we have to play the fewest games we can play and still call it a season, so that we don't lose more money, you know? In other words, it puts the sport in the ridiculous position of, the more games that they play, the more money owners say they lose. So you don't want to play with so many games. It's just a mess. And yeah. I sure wish they could compromise. And I think if you look up the definition of negotiating in the dictionary, I'm not sure that it would word it as being intractable in your initial position and just offering it in a different way each time you make a proposal. You know, they're basically offering the same thing, but wording it differently, or, you know, changing a few numbers around. I told somebody the other day that the owners have made this pizza, and it's the only pizza they're going to offer, and they just want the players to tell them how many slices should they slice it up into, you know. Now, one of my favorite jokes is, you know, the guy comes in, orders a pizza. He goes, should I make it into 8 slices? And he goes, no, just 6. I can't eat 8. well, it's the same pizza. Yeah. But they're just slicing it a different way. And they're just, I mean, they're just not going to agree. They're not going to agree on this.
Yeah, it does. It sort of reminds me of me bargaining with my kids, where I say one thing and they hold me to it, no matter how circumstances change. But at the same time, right. I don't want to imply that I think the players are the more unreasonable party here. I don't think that's the case. I think both sides have a lot, you know. And certainly, I'm not going to sympathize with the billionaires and the billionaires versus millionaires argument. But you know, I tried baiting Todd Rosiak into this, and he didn't quite take the bait on the last podcast I had with him, but. I actually kind of believe that baseball will recover a little more quickly from this than I think we presume. And that's because the circumstances of the pandemic are so strange. And, you know, I think, and we're kind of seeing this with the NBA, at the end of the day, it is actually kind of dangerous for players to congregate, come back to play. And we all want it. The players want it. The owners want it. Fans absolutely want that. But it isn't like the thing that health experts would recommend happen. So at the end of the day, I do think as history sort of moves on from this, hopefully moves on from where we are right now, I do think people will ultimately say, you know, that was just a weird time. Yeah, they couldn't agree, but like, you know, it isn't the end of the world that everything was thrown into chaos there. And baseball is baseball, and we're going to want it back so bad. We're going to want normalcy back in our lives so much that ultimately baseball sins here will be forgiven. Now, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe baseball goes into a six, seven-year depression over this. I don't know.
Well, I'm not going to fully endorse that, and here's why. If they figure out a way to play some games this year, but it's an antagonistic relationship, and the two sides are still sniping at each other. We have a CBA negotiation after next season, JR, and they only come around like every 6 or 7 years. And if they have an antagonistic feeling about what happened this year, it's going to bleed over until next year, and it's going to make that negotiation harder because there's going to be things that are brought up. Well, you know, you wouldn't do this last year, or you wouldn't do that last year, or you dug in and... And so I do think not being able to come to an agreement on this, a once-in-a-lifetime situation, a truly unique scenario, does not bode well next year for carving out another 7-year roadmap for the game. And so I think it's going to be very interesting what we get to 2022 with in baseball, because we have this incredibly unique and challenging situation in 2020 and then a CBA coming after the season in 2021. We haven't had a work stoppage since 95, but I know a lot of people who think we're going to have one this time. And it just seems like the sides want to make up for past things they thought they didn't get, especially the players. The players were generally deemed to have given back way more than they received in the last CBA. And they've heard that so much that I think they really want to, quote unquote, win the next negotiation.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Part of me wonders if 2021 if this renegotiation weren't so close, part of me wonders how contentious it would be right now. Would things be more peaceful? But the last few years...
No, I think that's a good point, because I do think they're digging in on some stuff now to set up that negotiation. And it's very unfortunate that that's happening, because these should be two separate things, you know, that you should not be doing that. If you're going to do that, here's my suggestion. Work out a settlement for this and the CBA right now.
You know? Good luck, yes.
I mean, I'm being facetious, but if you're trying to lay the groundwork during a pandemic negotiation to give you good footing for a CBA negotiation after next year, you've done the worst thing you can do in baseball. You've taken your eye off the ball.
Yeah, definitely. So, the draft, like we mentioned, has come and gone. Garrett Mitchell. I keep wanting to call him Garrett Richards, the former Angels pitcher.
Yeah.
This is like how I could never refer to Zach Davies as anything other than Kyle Davies. Never a Brewer. I don't know why that happened, but
or if you're old like me, maybe call him Garrett Morris, one of the original SNL cast members.
Yes, okay. There's a lot of different directions, but Garrett Mitchell, outfielder out of UCLA, it does sound like the Brewers got a guy they really wanted. I mean, they're probably not going to indicate otherwise, but a very potential upside of a college bat that's very, very high. It seems to fit with some of the more recent selections that the Brewers have made. Of course, the thing about him is he is a type 1 diabetic, has been living with that diagnosis for a long time, and calls to mind a previous draft pick when the Brewers drafted Dylan Covey a few years back and ultimately did not sign him because the diabetes diagnosis came so close to him getting drafted. But anyway, what are your impressions? What is the team saying about Garrett Mitchell, and what are your impressions of the player the Brewers got?
Well, every team always loves their first-round draft pick, right? Does anybody ever say, God, we hate the guy we just drafted?
we wanted that other guy, but this is a fine plan B.
So, but having said that, you have to really take the Brewers at their word that they love this pick, because every draft publication, every mock draft, every single assessment of this draft had Garrett Mitchell as a top 10 player in the draft, every single one. And for whatever reasons, I think the type 1 diabetes, maybe some people were skittish about that. I do think some other crazy things were going on in the draft. I mean, there was some interesting overdrafting of players high up in the draft that had to be financially motivated in a 5-round draft. So I do think that he was definitely the top player left on their board when their turn came at number 20, and that they were really stunned that he was there. And they have a long history with Garrett Mitchell. You really want to hear that, because the type 1 diabetes thing does not make them skittish at all, because they have dealt with him since his teens, and he I think he was diagnosed in maybe the third grade, so he's had it most or all of his life. He played on their area code teams, which is an amateur showcase thing. Played in some other fall league games. He's worn a Brewers cap, playing for Brewers teams in those formats. So they knew this guy very, very well. And he knew them. He was wearing a Brewers cap already in his interviews with us last night. So, and I just have to imagine his agent, Scott Boras, immediately called him and told him to take that off until we get you a deal. I think they really like him. You know, he's what they call a toolsy player, meaning he can do a lot of things. One thing he can really do is he can really run. He grades as an 80 runner, which is the highest grade. So he's just an absolute blazer on the base paths. And that makes him a great center fielder, too. I just envision him, JR. You know, he hasn't hit for a lot of power yet. That might come. You know, Christian Yelich didn't hit for a lot of power at the beginning either. But he really looks like the prototypical great defensive center fielder / leadoff type guy you want with speed, doesn't he? I mean, he really looks like he profiles like that type of guy. And so they're very happy to have him. And I do think he was a bargain at number 20 in the draft.
Yeah, and with a lot of college players getting taken in the early part of the draft, especially with the draft being reduced to 5 rounds, I got to think, I mean, part of it is that the college crop was just really good this year, but I got to think with so few players getting drafted, teams are thinking about guys that can be impact players sooner in their career. There isn't as much, long-term projecting. They need people in their system who are going to be highly rated minor leaguers early on, because, there just aren't that many bodies coming into the system at this point.
And plus, it doesn't look like there's going to be any minor leagues this year, so there's no player development. So
right,
get them closer to the majors, because it looks like this is going to be a lost year on the development front.
Yeah, this is this is a really tough go for the minor leagues. We should talk about that at some point too. But I do want to spend the majority of our time talking about Turning 50, this book that that you wrote, produced alongside the Journal Sentinel. Got a sort of a forward introduction from the one and only Bud Selig, the of course, the man who returned baseball to Milwaukee in 1970. I did talk to Ken Sanders on the last episode of the podcast about those early years, 1970, which I think is kind of one of the more fascinating chapters in Brewers history. Just the 6-day window they had to, like, you know, get County Stadium ready and make a team, get them the uniforms, the equipment, and everything in one place after the Seattle Pilots went bankrupt and the team was awarded to Milwaukee. But Ken Sanders, of course, he's part of this book, one of the interviews, one of the guys you talk to. Can you just, I guess off the top, just give a layout of like what you were looking for with this book and sort of why you chose the people to zoom in on, the interviews that you did for each decade that you did?
Well, first of all, you know, as proud as I am of doing the copy, it is in essence a photo book and meant to be a commemorative keepsake in that regard. And one of the keys to having cooperation with the Journal Sentinel, our bosses, in putting this book out was getting access to the Journal Sentinel photo archives. And man, was that fun, JR. Peter Clark, the publisher at KCI Sports, who put this book out, he and I think, spent 3 or 4 different sessions in the newsroom going through the photo library. And this probably contains at the most half of the photos that we pulled to be considered to be used. And so that was really fun. And, you know, I didn't get to Milwaukee till 1985, moving from Virginia. So a lot of the 1970 through 84 photos were the first time I was getting a good look at them, you know, and it was really cool. You know, there's a great photo in the book, a group photo taken after the Brewers made the trade for Vukovic, Fingers, and Simmons, of them standing with, I believe, Roy Howell. Does that sound right? I think it might be in the Pfister in some ballroom, and they've all got on, you know, stylish garb, and it's like I don't know, it almost looks like a rock band photo. You know, they got their 80s hair and facial, you know, and facial hair, and you know, they're so dashing, and not often you see the players all spiffed up in 3-piece suits and stuff like that, but it's almost like the Beatles coming to America type photo, you know. And so just a lot of fun stuff, a lot of fun photos in there. And you know, we tried to put as many fan photos as we could in there, because that's why baseball's played, for the fans. So we laid it out with 5 chapters, decade by decade. This is the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010s. And it's a history of the team, a narrative of the team. But I also did a separate new interview with a player from each decade. And Ken Sanders, who you just did your podcast on, was my interview from the 70s.
Yeah, so he was great. I really enjoyed talking to him. He was a sort of an underappreciated guy, because you know those teams weren't good, so you don't remember how dominant he was as a reliever. But for 2 years there, 70-71, the Bulldog was where it was at. He was a star, man.
Yeah, he was Raleigh Fingers before Raleigh Fingers showed up. A guy that pitched, you know, multiple innings, locked games down. And there's many cool things about Ken, but what I like is he stayed in Milwaukee in the winters. Back then they weren't making enough money to just take the winter off, and he got a job in Milwaukee, and then he ended up staying, and he's lived in Milwaukee ever since he played here. And that's kind of cool, because, you know, another player that I did a story on recently, Don August, he did the same thing. But it's kind of neat when players will ignore the ridiculous winter climate here and stay and make this their home, and it just shows you how much he loved Milwaukee. And he told me, the interesting story about being in spring training in 1970 and not knowing if they were going to play in Seattle or go to Milwaukee. I mean, can you imagine every day, especially towards the end of camp, you're taking the field and you're still waiting to hear what city you're going to play in? Can you imagine that?
That's, I mean, weird. It's so incredible.
And he said when they heard that the Pilots were filing for bankruptcy, which of course is what opened the door for Bud Selig's group to buy him and move him to Milwaukee, he said the very first natural instinct was wondering if any of them were going to be paid that year. If our team has no money, are we going to be paid?
And of course, they come to Milwaukee. There's a great photo in the book that I hadn't seen before, actually, of the fans from Milwaukee coming to the airport, waiting for these Seattle Pilots players, many of whom nobody had heard of in Milwaukee, and welcoming them to town. Like, you're our guys now. We've had 5 years without baseball. Yeah. And we may not know you. We know you're going to lose a whole bunch of games in 1970, but it was cool to see sort of the fans gathering, getting excited about baseball again.
Those players were totally taken aback by that. You know, they didn't have many people come out and watch them in Seattle. You know?
Right.
And so on short notice, for people to come out in the middle of the night when they arrived in Milwaukee, they were stunned by that. And they said, well, you know, maybe we're onto something here with this fan base. And that sure made an impression on the players right away that these people are daggone happy to see us.
Yeah, and you talk to other guys from different decades, Jeff Cirillo from the 90s, J.J. Hardy, Jim Gantner's in this book. Ryan Braun, you got a chance to talk to him about the most recent decade of Brewers baseball. How is Ryan Braun to talk to about that? I mean, he doesn't frequently get too reflective, doesn't dig in too deep if you ask him about some of the big moments of his career. How was it chatting with him for the 2010s interview?
Yeah, he's really good, though, talking about big picture stuff. He really gets it. And, you know, very few Brewers have played their entire career with the team, especially over, double-digit years. And so, he has a really good grasp of the franchise and the history and just where he fits in and where everyone else fits in. And so, he's really been here for the best 10-year period that and a little beyond for him that the team's ever had. He's been part of four playoff teams. You know, he arrived in the major leagues in 07, got rookie of the year that year. They went to the playoffs the next year, 08, breaking a 26-year drought. Then they went again in 11. And then after completely tearing the team down and leaving it uncertain whether he would ever see the playoffs again, they've gone two more times, you know. So four playoff, you know, he's the only Brewer that's played on in the playoffs four different times. And so he's been here for what's been a real sweet spot of the organization. And it's been kind of, you know, they really hoped when they opened Miller Park it would be like that, but it took a lot of years after they moved in there for them to be good. And they didn't really see it taking that much time. But once they got good, they've done a pretty good job of being competitive every year.
One of the quotes is from Robin Yount when he signed a contract in 1990 to, I think it's another 3 years to wrap up his career, saying, "My goal is to bring a championship to Milwaukee." I love Robin Yount. Feels a little quaint, a little like, don't think it's going to happen in the first 3 years of the 90s. But then again, they did have a really good team in 1992. And I don't think this is lost on people, but what you're talking about, this is the, you know, the heyday of Brewers baseball. I mean, they had their sort of, it's kind of like a comet in the 80s. They were there and then very much gone after that in terms of competing for championships. And this is, given the way the structure of the postseason is now, this is the best the Brewers fans have had in 50 years to have four playoff appearances since 2008. And the way the season, if we have a 50-game season, the Brewers will absolutely be in the mix to be one of the best teams, you know, because everybody's in the mix to be one of the best teams. Right. And the way their bullpen is structured, I mean, we could conceivably see an unprecedented third straight trip to the postseason. Could be an expanded postseason. I mean, honestly, like, this is, again, it's not lost on people, but sometimes you just have to take a step back when you see the history of this organization and remind yourself, man, it doesn't get better than this for Brewers fans. This is a really good time right now.
Yeah, the Brewers have played their best baseball under Craig Counsell toward the end of the season with expanded rosters. So if we're going to play a shortened season with expanded rosters, it's right in their wheelhouse, you know? It's the way they like to play the game. They like chopping the game up and getting 27 outs with as many different pitchers as it takes to do it. And I think that's the way the game will be played by everybody this year because they'll have to really be careful with the pitchers. And so And so I think the Brewers do like their chances. They also built a really versatile team with a lot of multi-position players that can move around. And, you know, we're all hearing it's going to be they're going to add the DH. That works for the Brewers so well because it solves the Ryan Braun dilemma.
Sure does.
You know, we were waiting for the start of the season before the pandemic because we couldn't wait to see where the heck he was going to play. because they said, oh, he's going to play some at first base and some in left field. Well, Christian Yelich is now the left fielder. Good luck prying playing time away from him. And then they had all kinds of first base types, you know. Yeah. And so, but just sliding him into DH, you know, and just letting him hit and not have to play in the field, which lets you play Abascal, Garcia, Yelich, and Kane every day in the outfield. And also probably guarantees something that wasn't guaranteed, Ben Gamel making the team. And he's such a versatile outfielder, can help you off the bench in so many ways. I just think it does set up nicely for the Brewers if they play under these different rules.
Yeah, I agree with you. And just don't before I leave the book, anything else that that surprised you or really you enjoyed writing about that struck you? I know you've been here for the majority of this. I think 1985 or 86. You could tell me when you started covering the Brewers. But anything maybe from those 70s that you weren't aware of when you put this book together?
You know, I almost dreaded doing the 90s because that was a tough decade for the Brewers. But then, you know, you go through and so much was going on in the game. And that's when they finally pushed through plans for the new ballpark. They did have that incredible year in 92 that you mentioned that if there would have been a wild card, they probably would have been in. I love the photo on page 71 that shows Phil Bob Uecker doing his pregame radio show with Phil Garner, the manager. You know, he does a pregame manager show every day. So Uecker's in full uniform, too, which is unusual because back then he threw batting practice and he would dress out with the team and throw BP. He kept in shape that way and had fun and got to, you know, have camaraderie with the guys. So Uecker's, you know, got his tape recorder in hand, but he's wearing a baseball uniform and he has just said something that Garner's laughing his butt off. And so, you know, it allows you to just wonder, what did Bob Uecker just say to Phil Garner that made him laugh so loud? And who knows? Who knows? But, you know, it's hard to see any photo of Uecker talking to another person and the other person at least not smiling, not outright laughing. So, because he's usually got a whole lot of funny things to say. I love that photo a lot. And they're just, you know, there's a construction photo in there that shows County still standing and Miller Park rising right next to it. And I think we forget how close those two structures were to each other. You know, there was a part time when they had to take down part of County Stadium to get Miller Park, you know, to fit in that tight footprint. So photos, you know, there's some photos that make you cringe. Dean Taylor holding up a new uniform for Davey Lopes, because we know that marriage didn't work very good.
No, it did not. Oh, the 90s.
And I mean, they hope, you know, another cool photo. Do you remember that in the final, you know, games of County Stadium, they were doing a countdown to Miller Park and they had numbers that were being changed each day and they'd have luminaries come out there and do it. Well, the final countdown that went from 1 to 0, obviously Bud Selig was given the honor of pulling the final number 1 and getting, and so we have a photo of that. So just cool stuff like I love the photo in the final game at County Stadium. They brought back so many great stars from the past, and we have a photo. How eclectic is this photo? Willie Davis, who recently passed away, right?
Yes, he did, just this year.
Yeah, of the Packers, Hank Aaron of the Braves/Brewers, and Robin all waving to the crowd. And there's a picture of Warren Spahn throwing out the ceremonial first pitch there at the in the Brewers last game. And I had forgot he did that. And he's passed away quite a few years ago now. And like I said, I am proud of the copy I wrote, but it is a photo book. It's a commemorative book. You know, Father's Day, JR.
Yes, yeah, it's coming up and you can buy it at Amazon.com. Where else can you get the book?
You know, if you can't find them in an actual store, you can definitely get them at Amazon Books or KCISports.com. And, you know, while we wait for baseball season to begin, why not look at the past 50 years of Brewers history? I do feel so sorry for the franchise that, you know, their celebration that was going to be a year-long celebration is just not going to happen now. If they start playing games with no fans, I'm not sure how good a ceremony will be and who they'll be doing it for. So, but this is a keepsake book, you know, it's, and 2020 has been a terrible year in general, and certainly there's lots of time to kill, read a good photo book here of the Brewers. So that's my pitch to everyone, and I think you'll enjoy it.
It's called Turning 50. The Brewers celebrate a half century in Milwaukee. Tom Haudricourt's book on the history of the Milwaukee Brewers. Like you said, kcibooks.com, amazon.com. Great opportunity for Father's Day. And hopefully there will be some, you know, better baseball news for Father's Day too, so that we can actually get some real life baseball in 2020. It does look like we're headed there. It might not be quite what everyone's hoping for, but lot still to iron out too before we can get there. Tom Haudricourt, Milwaukee Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks for joining us, Tom. We'll chat again soon.
Thanks, JR.